Our reading is from Matthew. As they were leaving Jericho, a large crowd followed him. There were two blind men sitting by the roadside. When they heard Jesus was passing by, they shouted, "Lord, have mercy on us, Son of David." The crowd sternly ordered them to be quiet, but they shouted even more loudly, "Have mercy on us, Lord, Son of David." Jesus stood still and called them, saying, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said to him, "Lord, let our eyes be opened." Moved with compassion, Jesus touched their eyes. Immediately, they regained their sight and followed him. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Hey, St. Luke's, Ed Carpenter once again, and today you're going to be thinking about the blue flag. The blue flag in a race gets shown to a slower car when there's faster traffic coming behind. So it could be a car usually that's one or more laps down, and it's just an informative flag to let them know that they have a faster car approaching. To talk more about the blue flag today, you're going to be hearing from Indy 500 champion Elio Castroneves.
Getting the blue flag in a race, that means somebody's having a better day than you. Certainly, it's a very difficult scenario, but you just gotta face it and thinking about, if nothing you can do, just thinking about the next race. When you have a blue flag also in life, I guess you can translate that to humble. And anything you do, you gotta be humble. Certainly, it helps you to achieve your goals, plus, it's the right thing to do. When you see somebody getting the blue flag, certainly you do having a better day than that person, and you just realize that you just gotta keep moving on. And obviously in life it happens the same way, so, and that's where times for you to come and help. Some people sometimes don't think they need help, but all of us sometimes need a little bit of faith, a little bit of help, a little bit of a confidence, you know, extra, so that it can boost you for the next adventure. It's extremely important for you to be humble in life. Not being humble basically is not gonna take you anywhere, you know. And people sometimes confuse being humble with weakness, you know. And it's good for you to be generous, humble. But at the same time, the racetrack, you gotta go for it, you know. You gotta be aggressive and show what you got. You gotta have faith in being humble. It's not gonna make you weak or distract you at all. Actually, the opposite. You're gonna make you go really far.
When we did that video, that interview, we weren't sure whether to have Elio in his racing suit or his Dancing with the Stars outfit. Not sure which one people might recognize more, but we're thinking about the blue flag. How many of you even racing fans would say, "I don't know that I've ever seen the blue flag before"? Anybody? It's like, this is the flag I don't know much about. Several things got shared about the blue flag that are important in what we heard a moment ago. First, Elio made the comment, if you're able to hear it, that if you're the driver who is having a good day, you're the one in the lead, and you come up behind another driver, you appreciate them making room for you. So you at least understand what it's like to appreciate somebody else moving over so that you can go by. He also talked about humility and just living, that having a humble spirit takes you far in life. Now, I thought it was interesting that while he was talking about having a humble spirit, they showed him climbing the fence, shaking his fist in victory at the 500. And Ed Carpenter explained what the blue flag is, that this is the courtesy flag in racing. Drivers see this when they've got a faster driver coming up behind them, and they're being encouraged to move over. Now, Ed Carpenter pointed out that unlike the yellow flag or the red flag, you do not have to pay attention to this flag if you're a driver. It does not make you popular to ignore it, but you don't have to. It is a courtesy. It is a courtesy to move over. Stephen Covey, in his well-known book from a number of years ago, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, describes what living with a blue flag mentality looks like. He tells the story of being on a New York subway one morning. It was a fairly quiet scene. People were reading their newspapers, listening to music with their headphones, and on comes a dad with his small children. The dad sits down and closes his eyes as if taking a nap, and the children run wild up and down the aisle, screaming, hitting people's newspapers. And Covey says, I just sat there getting irritated. This man appears oblivious to what his children are doing, and I couldn't take it anymore. I finally leaned over and said, "Sir, your kids are disrupting everyone in the car. Would you mind getting them under control?" The man looked up and opened his eyes as if for the first time becoming aware of the situation, and he says, "Yes, I guess I should do something. We just came from the hospital where their mother died, and I suppose they don't quite know how to act right now." That was a blue flag moment. For Covey, it was a moment to suddenly step aside from whatever he thought was important in the moment and focus on this guy. Pay attention to his race. Move to the outside lane. In the spiritual life, recognizing blue flags are essential. Recognizing when we have an opportunity to make a difference in somebody else's life. But the interesting thing about blue flags is you can't really predict when those moments are going to come along. They seldom happen when it's convenient. They're usually an inconvenience. And they're not mandatory. You can march right through life and never pay attention to a blue flag. But if you live with a sensitivity to them, you live with an awareness of other people's races, and when you have a chance to make a difference in them, oh, how that can change life. Jesus found this so important to teach his followers that he did not leave the lesson to words alone. Jesus gave by example the importance of living with a blue flag spirit. He washed the feet of the disciples, teaching them the value of taking on the role of a servant. He put children on his knee when other people tried to shoo the children away, telling them, "You're not important enough to get his attention." To say, "No, no, no. If you get so important that you start putting people under you, you have missed the value of following me." So what was the significance one day when Jesus was walking through Jericho and a crowd was around him pressing for his attention, and two blind beggars were way off to the roadside crying out his name, and he stopped and he turned to give them attention, and other people tried to quiet them down, and he went to ask what they wanted, and he had compassion on them, and he healed them. There are so many stories in Jesus' life that are like that. This one doesn't really stand out. What makes it stand out is when we read what happens right before this story. It's the preceding verses in Matthew chapter 20 that makes us appreciate what's going on in this story. Jesus has just told his disciples that he's going to Jerusalem, and there he is going to be crucified. Now pause for a moment and just imagine being in Jesus' shoes. If you're about to face crucifixion, would you be that concerned about what other people are going through? I mean, when you're facing that, don't you think you get a pass on worrying about other people's problems? I mean, aren't yours big enough? And maybe that's why the disciples act out the way they do. They were like the children on that train creating a disturbance. They probably didn't know what to do, so that's what they did. they created a disturbance. First, the mother of two of the disciples, James and John. Well, I think we've got some slides here. Maybe not. Can you get them over to that one, guys? The mother of James and John come and say to Jesus, "Would you let my two sons, when your kingdom comes, sit at your right hand and at your left hand?" Now, this begins to create a big disturbance with the other disciples. When the 10 heard it, they were angry with the two brothers. So they began to fight, creating a disturbance. So Jesus calls them together. He says, "You know that those who rule the Gentiles show off their authority over them, and their high-ranking officials order them around, but that's not the way it will be with you." In other words, Jesus is saying to his followers, "I just told you what's about to happen to me. I'm going to be crucified, and you're worrying about who's the greatest? You don't even get it. That is not why I have come. I am facing my final laps, but my finish line is not getting to the end. It's what happens along the way. It's about being a servant. It's about not worrying about your own greatness. It's what you can do for others." So, as if to demonstrate the point, the very next scene, he's walking through the village of Jericho, and blind beggars call out his name. And people try to tell them to be quiet. What are they telling them by that? "You don't matter as much as we do. You don't deserve his attention as much as us." Has anybody ever treated you that way? That just by their treatment, without the words that they use, what they're saying to you, "You don't really matter. Your needs are not as important as my needs." But Jesus gives them his attention, and he heals them. What is Jesus communicating to his followers in this story? What's he communicating to us? To go back to our racing analogy, what can we learn in this story about what it means to live with a spirit that moves to the outside lane? Here's what I want to do. I want to offer four things about what it means to move to the outside lane in life. And with each one, I want to offer an assignment. Now, if you're a person who's open to assignments, you might make some notes of these. If you're not, if you don't come to church to get homework, then just throw down the pencil and paper and look like you're interested for a few minutes. But if you're in a Lent small group, you might find this very helpful preparation for your group meeting this week. I'm in a group that meets at 6:30 on Tuesday mornings, and it's a great group. And I look forward to hearing what the other guys, it's a men's group, what the other guys in our group might reflect with some of these questions. So let's look at the first one. Moving to the outside lane begins with recognizing others have moved over for us. That's where it starts. Having a willingness to move over for other people begins with recognizing somebody's moved over for me. What does it mean to put yourself in the position of someone you can help? Think about the blind beggars in Jericho. What would it be like to be in their position? You may say, "Well, I can't relate to that. I mean, I've never been blind. I've never been a beggar. I don't know what their position is like." Let me ask you this. Where would your life be, or could your life be in that position were it not for some other people? I had lunch the other day with Charles Harrison. He's the pastor of Barnes United Methodist Church downtown. And he told me the story about growing up in Louisville, Kentucky. When he was a teenager, his brother was gunned down. And he said it made him so mad. He was so full of anger, all he could think about was killing the people who did this. And he made his mind up that's what he was going to do. He was going to track them down. He was going to kill them. And some men in his church found out about this. And they tracked him down first. And they said, "Charles, we are not going to let you do this. you have too much of a future. We're not going to let it happen. And they sat and listened to him as he poured out his heart and got that anger out of him, and they loved him, and they mentored him, and they continued to help him grow up. He told me that. We're sitting eating lunch up at Paradise Cafe, and I said, you wouldn't be here today if it weren't for those men in your church, would you? He said, I am convinced you and I would not be eating lunch today were it not for them. Now, maybe you do not have a story that dramatic in your life, but would you be where you are today were it not for some people who sacrificed for you, who moved over for you, who paid some attention to you? Who are those people? In fact, that's the first assignment. Make a list of people who come to mind for you, who have moved over on your behalf. Who are they? Parents? Other family members? A coach? A teacher? Maybe a total stranger. I was thinking about this the other day, and a name came to me I had not thought of in years. Mildred Swicegood. She was married to a United Methodist pastor, and their son went to Pfeiffer College a few years before I did. When her husband passed away and the estate got settled, she decided to take a good portion of that money she received and give it to Pfeiffer College to establish a scholarship for students considering going into full-time Christian service. I was a recipient of that scholarship. I found out about her. I found out that she lived just a few miles from where I grew up in Winston-Salem. One day I decided when I went home from college to look her up and to thank her. Now, in my freshman college mindset, I thought, wow, somebody who endowed a scholarship must be rich. I was trying to imagine, within a few miles of my house, where are any really, really big houses where she might live? And I found out she lived in a condo. Small little place, a one-bedroom condo not too far away. She wasn't rich. She was a widow, asking the question, how can I honor my husband? And instead of using these resources for me, how can I give them to somebody I don't even know who might be a blessing to other people? Who's on your list? What does your list look like? Moving to the outside lane also redefines what winning is. It redefines winning. Now, to get an idea of what I'm talking about here, to get a picture of this, I want you to see a video of one of the great all-time racing legends. Take a look.
As the laps wind down, Jamie McMurray's the race leader, Cal Naughton in second, Ricky Bobby in third.
What's up, Cal? You ready for a little shake and bakeage? Hey, buddy!
Naughton Jr. is letting Ricky Bobby draft up to him to make that slingshot move past McMurray.
Well, boogity, boogity. Can you believe that he would do that for his teammate, set him up that way?
Slingshot, engage.
Hey, Cal, I'm sorry about wrecking you today. I mean, but that's for the team.
No, that's cool. That's cool, Ricky. That's cool. And, I was thinking, though, one time it would be really awesome if, like, you could slingshot me in for a win.
Yeah, but, okay, but if you won, how am I going to win?
Yeah.
Think about it.
No, I was thinking about it.
I mean, it's not like you're finishing 18th.
Nothing wrong with silver.
Nothing wrong with silver at all.
I'm just kidding you, man. I don't want to win. I'll just bury it down inside.
Bury it deep down in there and never bring it up again.
It's painful, and I love you.
Hold on. That just takes me back to home. Hold on just a minute here. Ricky Bobby. Ricky Bobby, who needed other people to win, but what was winning for him? Him crossing the finish line. That is what it was all about. Is that what winning is for you? Is winning about where you end up, or is it about what happens along the way? And there's a vast difference. If winning is about where you end up, other people's needs will always be an inconvenience. Other people will always get in the way if they ever want to win. But if winning is about what happens along the way, that's a lot different. That's a lot more fulfilling. We all have the ability to make a difference in people's lives along the way, to pour into them. I love the story about a group of businessmen who were out of town at a conference. They were trying to catch their plane to go home. They were running to get on the shuttle, and as they were running along, they kicked over a little boy's newspaper stand, and papers and magazines went flying, and they stopped, they turned around and looked at the mess, and then they heard the horn blow. They had to get on that shuttle or they were going to miss the plane. They all took off except for one man. He turned around to help the boy. He yelled back to his friends, "Go ahead, guys, I'll just catch another plane." He took the little boy's papers, he neatened them and put them back in their stacks, and when everything got back the way it was, he handed the boy a $10 bill, and the boy looked up at him and he said, "Wow, I wish you were my daddy. I wish you were my daddy." That man spent the next half hour going around that block looking for another kid whose newspaper stand got knocked over. Why? Because winning got redefined. Winning got redefined. What does winning look like to you? In fact, that's the second assignment. Just to write down this question and take it home with you. Winning to me means, what's the rest of that sentence? Whatever your answer is, whatever it is, if you read that answer at least once or twice a week, it will have an impact on your life and the lives of the people around you, for good or bad, whatever your answer is. Your answer to what winning looks like will impact other people. What does winning look like for you? And then number three, moving to the outside lane asks, what can I do to touch someone? Going back to the story of Jesus. He hears the cry of the beggars, he asks what they want, they tell him, and then it says he touched them. Now, don't get too caught up in the power of Jesus. It simply means Jesus did for them what was in his power to do. He did for them what was in his power to do. When it comes to helping other people, we really shouldn't begin with what other people need. I know that sounds contradictory to popular opinion, doesn't it? We're always taught, focus on the needs of others. The only problem is we can make deductions about whether or not we can help other people. Well, their needs are too big for me. This is going to take somebody else. It can convince us not to do anything at all. But if we start with, what can I do? Because here's the truth about you and me. God gives every one of us here something that can touch another person's life and make a difference. You right now have something that can touch another person's life in a profound way. And when we just say, well, what can I do to touch someone? That changes it. You may know this story from the internet a few years ago. It was very popular. Barbara Glanz is a business consultant, motivational speaker, and she was asked to do a training for a national grocery store chain on customer service. So people came for the one-day training. And after the workshop, a young man named Johnny came up to speak with her. He acknowledged that he has Down syndrome, and he said, I don't know what I can do for customers. I'm just a bag boy. This is a picture of Johnny. And so Barbara Glanz said to him, well, if you ask yourself, Johnny, what can I do to help customers? You'll find something. So he went home thinking about that. He talked with his father. He said to his dad, you know, I notice every day people come through to get their groceries and they're always frowning. People are always serious in the grocery store. They're getting their groceries scanned, and they're not smiling, and they don't look happy. I want to do something to make people smile. And so he started thinking of quotes to just brighten people's day. So he said, Dad, what if I put a quote in everybody's grocery bag? So his dad helped him each night, print off a list of quotes and cut them into strips, and he would sign his name on the back. And every time he bagged somebody's groceries, he would put a quote for the day in the bag. About a month later, the manager of the store called Barbara Glanz. He said, "I don't know if you need this or not, but I wanted you to know the impact you had on my employees. I went out the other day looking at the checkout lines, and I noticed that one of them was three times longer than all of the others. And that's a problem because I hear people complaining all the time, 'You're not getting us through fast enough. This place is too slow.' So I started going to people, 'How about going down to lane 4? It's open. Lane 5 is open.' And people are going, 'No, no, we'll wait in line. We're okay with that.' This just amazed him. So he started watching what was going on. He realized it was Johnny's line. They wanted to get his quote and his encouraging word and his smile. They were willing to slow down their race just for that. Oh, what a difference it makes when we say, you know, what can I do to touch someone? That's the third assignment. Third assignment is to regularly ask yourself, what can I do to touch someone? If every day you say, God, show me who you want me to touch today for you, you'll find an answer somewhere. Doesn't have to be huge. It doesn't have to be big. As simple as putting a quote in a grocery bag. You never know the difference it might make. Last, moving to the outside lane means moving over for people we've never met. Moving over for people we've never met. The story of Jesus healing the blind beggars ends by telling us that they received their sight and they followed him. Now, we don't know what became of these two blind beggars. We don't know what they went on to do in life, but what we do know is they started following one who gave them an example for living to make a difference in other people's lives. Don't you think they did? I mean, don't you think that those two beggars one day told other people about somebody who moved over for them? And that they looked for a way to move over for other people. And they helped others, that they did what they could. What a difference it makes. What a difference it makes when people are willing to sacrifice and move over, not just for their own kids or their own family or the people in their neighborhood or the people who look like them, but people who are total strangers, people they've never met before. Our church has done that. You know, 3 weeks ago, we started the 10:45 service. And there are people who worshiped at 11 o'clock every Sunday because they said, that's my lane. That's my hour. I get to hear this magnificent pipe organ. I get to hear this magnificent choir. That's my lane. And they were willing to move over, and many of you are in this service right now, and make room for people you've never met. Let me introduce a couple of them to you. I got an email from a prominent leader in Indianapolis this week. He and his wife and their teenage daughter came to the first 10:45 service. Week number 2, they came back, and teenage daughter number 1 invited teenage daughter number 2, her sister. Told her sister, you've got to come. Week number 3, last Sunday, mom and dad had to be out of town. And he said in his email, in our life, when mom and dad were gone, that was all the excuse our daughters needed not to go to church. But we found out while we were gone, our two daughters came to 10:45 because they didn't want to miss it. Making room for people we don't even know. That is why the church is the hope of the world. That is why I believe to the core of my being that when the church is at its best, it is the hope of the world. When people say that my resources, my gifts, and my talent, that I want to use it for people I don't even know, it changes the world. It makes an impact. It makes a difference. It is fascinating to me that in racing, this flag is the least known. It's the least recognized. Because in the Christian life, I don't think there is one that's more important. So, last assignment. What can you do today to bless people you don't even know? Go do something today. Not tomorrow, not later this week, today. You can go do one of them right now. After the benediction and after our closing song, you can go to the Great Hall and package meals for hungry people in Indianapolis and Haiti. You can be at one of those tables putting ingredients in, sealing the bag. They're going to bless people you've never met. Maybe later today you're going to go through a checkout line somewhere. Even if you don't plan to now. Go to McDonald's, get a milkshake, and when you're at the checkout window and you're about to pay, go ahead and pay for the person behind you and just hope it's not a van with 10 kids in it. Do something for somebody you don't even know and take no credit for it. Because when people experience that, somebody I don't even know did this for me, it gives them hope. So as we get ready to sing our closing song, and I lead us in a closing prayer, let's stand for that prayer. Would you stand? O loving and gracious God, we stand as a sign of our readiness to be sent. Send us. Send us forth with a conviction that we are people who are recipients of others' sacrifice. We are people you can use to touch and make a difference in other people's lives. So keep us aware of every time your Spirit would wave a blue flag in front of us and ask us to just move to the outside lane so that we can focus on others for you. Amen.